You're now listening to Sound Talent Media. Check out more shows at soundtalentmedia.com.
Wait, what is that? Hello, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to today's episode of the ToneMob.com podcast, the show about guitar tone and the people behind it. As you are probably aware, I am your host, Blake Weiland. I had to question myself on that. Blake Weiland, and with me today I have Jeff Cadlick from Champ Tone Guitars. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well, man. How about yourself?
Pretty good. I'm a little damp, as we discussed already, but you know, other than that, that's just kind of to be expected this time of year where I'm at, so.
Oh yeah, for sure, man, for sure.
But we're finally getting around to doing this after a few unsuccessful attempts, so therefore that makes me happy, so.
Yeah, likewise. It's I'm glad we were able to, you know, get all the wires plugged in the right way and we can do our thing, so I've been looking forward to it.
Most definitely. We've probably already had a good two or three podcasts worth of conversation prior to this that probably should have been recorded, but hey, whatever.
It's all good, you know. It's like, you know, something that probably every, you know, guitar player or certainly, you know, gear junkie can relate to is, you know, every time they've sold something that maybe they wish they hadn't, and somewhere along the line I picked up from somebody like, well, there's one thing I'm sure of, you know, there's always more. I haven't really ever come across a situation where there's just not more.
That's very true.
And of course, you know, that's in regard to, you know, the talks we've already had, because yeah, man, it's amazing how, you get some guitar guys together or just music geeks or whatever it might be. You can just burn the hours fast.
I know. And it's like, where did that time go? Oh, geez, I was supposed to be doing, oh boy, I gotta go.
So. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. Absolutely, man. It's an amazing thing.
It just brings everybody together in such a magical, lovely way.
It does. I think, I imagine at least, like, some of it is, you know, as an instrumentalist or, you know, someone who spends a lot of time working on, you know, their craft, whatever it might be. I don't think it's just exclusive to guitar players, you know, but... an artist or whoever it might be, you know, you kind of spend a lot of time working on stuff by yourself, you know, even if you are, you know, in a band and, you know, specifically that type of, you know, working situation, you know, you're working with other people, but, when you're practicing your instrument, you know, you're the only one that can do that. You know, no one can practice your instrument for you. So, by way of that, you spend a lot of time by yourself, you know, honing your craft, if you will, and all, you know, just working on technique or whatever it might be, or sound or tone or feel. And then, I think that's what possibly lends like the excitement and the enthusiasm when you do get together with other guys, you know, or gals who are really into, you know, what they're doing and put a lot of hard time and work into it, because you're by yourself a lot, you know, you kind of do it in isolation. And so when you get the chance, you just kind of, it's overboard, you know, you're like, you know, you just can't contain the excitement, you know?
Yeah. And I know what you mean. And I'm a little bit spoiled in that, you know, some of my best friends, you know, that are my best friends, regardless of interest, they're just my best friends. They happen to be gearheads as well. So regardless of, you know, what I'm doing, I always have somebody to talk about gear with. And so I get really spoiled that way. And I, through conversations with other people, I'm starting to realize that not everybody is that fortunate. So, I try not to take that for granted. 'Cause I do get a lot of opportunities to nerd out with you know, some of my best friends. So that doesn't happen for everyone. So I'm very happy about that.
No, you're right. You know, that's a great thing, man. It absolutely is. That's very cool.
It is. It's something that I honestly took for granted until one of my recent podcast interviews. I was talking to, I can't remember which one of the 60 Cycle Hum guys I was talking to, but it just kind of like light bulb turned on. I'm like, oh wait, not everybody has a homie in their, you know, immediate circle that is just as big of a gear nerd as they are. Most people don't have that, I would think.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I think, if you're, you're fortunate enough in life, you've got different friends from different walks of life, you know, diversity, basically, you know, that's what is, interesting and appealing, you know, I think generally to most people, or certainly the people that I like to hang out with, you know, you have different interests, and that's how you get turned on to different things, you know, because, you know, you and I both know, I mean, left to my own vices, you know, I may not, I could have no clue what's going on in the entire world around me. You know, if I could just, you know, just like, where's Jeff? He's just like, well, he's still, changing out V1 tubes in his amp or something, you know, like trying to find something or whatever it might be. And you're just like, well, it is okay to acknowledge and engage with other things in the world.
Yes. Yes. So, and it's actually important.
Exactly. I was just going to say that.
So, yeah, it is. And I'm not going to lie. I've purposely at times like have to step away. Like, not because I really want to, but it's like, okay, that is enough gear for 1 week. Like, you get a hold of yourself, like go do something else.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I understand. I totally do. Especially to, you know, now it's I think it's kind of an amazing time. I mean, with, I guess it's specifically in regard to the amount of, or I should say maybe the awareness that, you know, we have through, digital connectivity of all these great builders and, artisan creators of guitars and amplifiers and basically devices to create music with. It's like, I think we're, I kind of feel and would like to believe that we're in a sort of a modern golden age, because there's just, there's so much really awesome stuff out there. And, you know, there's, you know, some stuff is okay, but generally I would say that I feel like I see something really impressive or some really great work being done, you know, specifically in the, you know, guitar world, like almost every day. It's amazing.
It is. I totally agree. I've said it many times that we are living in a super spoiled age. I mean, as much as we love the vintage gear, and I love vintage gear and the old way of doing things, like the progression that's been made in the last, you know, 10, 15 years is like almost mind blowing. How the quality on everything has gone up and the innovation. It's really cool. And we are, no wonder I think there's more gearheads now than there probably ever was. Just because there's so much cool stuff. It's so much more interesting to be a gearhead. So, therefore, that kind of spreads and infects everybody with the gas and all that wonderful stuff.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, I agree. You know, it's pretty cool. The lens when focused on the original wave of, you know, great workmanship. You know, of, you know, the 50s or sort of however you want to characterize it. And I know everyone has their favorites, but, you know, there was only so many people doing it, back then. And certainly, notably, you know,
right.
So it's yeah, it's pretty cool, you know.
It
It's
is.
definitely really cool stuff. What are some what are some of the things that you're seeing that you really like? You know, I'm sure it's probably quite a few things that I'm not even aware of, you know.
Well, I'm a super pedal nerd, so that is a lot of what I kind of zero in on. But just the things that are being made possible, that weren't possible, 10 years ago. Like, one of the really cool things I think that's come out lately is the JHS Muffaletta. I think that thing is really cool, and I'm not sure if you've seen it or if you haven't, but for
I
those of you,
have.
yeah, okay.
I haven't had a chance to get my hands on one, but I've heard Jimmy Mark about it, and I've definitely it's been on my radar. I've noticed it, and it seems like everybody's pretty crazy about it.
Well, it's just one of those things where it's a Big Muff isn't really an innovation, and don't get me wrong, I love the Big Muff. It's one of my favorite pedals.
Yeah.
I'm gonna let this train go by.
Yeah,
I don't know if you can hear that.
no, let's listen to that. I love that. That's great.
I'm gonna let this train go by, and because it's gonna get loud here in a second, and then I'm gonna restart that thought.
Sure. I wish you luck in remembering it, 'cause I won't.
I'm good. I'm gonna start talking. I know where I can splice that in,
Okay.
and it won't really interrupt what we were talking about at all.
No, that's
So.
cool.
So yeah, there you go, train. Yeah, blow your horn.
Yep. See you later.
This train has interrupted me many times, I'm not gonna lie, but I'm starting to get more comfortable with my splicing abilities, therefore makes it easier.
Yeah, that can be tough, man, with specifically with dialogue and whatever in this, you know, ambient noise, in this case, you know, a train, horn, can
Well,
be hard to do those transitions, when you edit them.
yeah, and it's not, it's not so bad, like to where it's just very distracting, like when this one is just like less than it's like 75 yards away, so it's very loud. So yeah, it's just kind of the nature of me trying to record at work. It doesn't happen all the time, but it has happened before. So. Okay, are they? Okay, I don't think they're gonna come back. I think we're in business. Okay.
Right. So the
It's not.
muffaletta.
Yeah. So here we go. It's not that like a Big Muff in and of itself is like a big innovation anymore. Like it's been around forever. And don't get me wrong, it's one of my favorite pedals. Like just that basic circuit is one of my favorite designs as far as a player goes. But having all the best flavors stuffed into one box that you just turn a dial and you can get whatever one you are in the mood for, that just is awesome. And have it in such a small enclosure, a single pedal, single normal size pedal enclosure. It's like, wow, that is a really impressive in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely, man. You know, I tend to lean towards the side of, give me a device, that does something, one thing, and does it extremely well. And that's just kind of how my mind works. But in the case of that, the muffaletta, I think it's really cool because you're still, it's about fuzz, you know? So it's not like it's trying to be a fuzz pedal and a reverb pedal too. We'll throw some reverb on here. How about we throw a reverb knob on this? Yeah, that's a great idea, and most people, I think we don't reach, the audience and be like, dude, why did they do that?
Yeah, well, and they did a great job at making it real simple,
Yeah.
which helps a lot. It's like, yeah, great, there's all these you know, all these flavors in one box, but it's not confusing to figure out to dial in what you're trying to dial in. It's super easy to use. So that one has been super impressive. Like, but like, you know, I talk about it on here, like that thing needs any more press. It's doing amazing. So
I'm sure
some of the other really cool stuff that doesn't really need any more press either, but I haven't got to actually lay my fingers on any of it yet. I will definitely, but like the Chase Bliss stuff, that Spectre flanger he just came out with is like, I'm like, oh man, I never even used to be into flanger, and now I really want to try that like really very badly. So, yeah.
Yeah. What's that? That Chase Bliss? Is that the name?
Yeah. Chase Bliss Audio.
Oh, cool. See, I never heard of that, so I'm going to have to check it out.
You got to check out what he's doing. Joel over there it's a little bit like, it's a little bit out there as far as controls go. Like his pedals offer an insane amount of control on whatever effect it is they're trying to, you know, trying to achieve.
Yeah.
You know, just different waveforms on phasers and tremolos and all that. It's just, I'm trying to put it into words, but it's kind of like, just go Google it and you'll understand what I mean. There's a million controls, well executed, and it's there again, all in a normal sized pedal. It's just very impressive. Just impressive from an engineering standpoint. It's like, wow.
Oh, neat, yeah. Yeah, I'm excited to check it out. I was actually looking at some of the Mr. Black pedals a few days ago that, you know, you had mentioned that company to me in one of our conversations. And, you know, prior to that, I'd never heard of Mr. Black pedals. But I think, you know, whoever it is, the guy that, you know, that's running that company or does the designs.
Yeah, that's Jack DeVille. He's been around the block, so to say. He does that, and then he's also done stuff for a lot of other people. So that guy knows what's up.
Yeah, yeah. I like some of his you know, just your description of the Chase Bliss pedal kind of made me think of his stuff, because the Mr. Black stuff to me was cool, because I got kind of an experimental, you know, slant and vibe from it, which I liked. You know, like he's got, you know, some of the things are somewhat traditional, but, you know, his verb and kind of delay stuff that he had to me was really interesting. And I love reverb and pretty much any, you know, form or variant of delay. So,
if you like those kind of effects, then he's definitely somebody to scope out, because that's kind of what he does everything really well, but that's what he's really known for. So,
sure.
Definitely. I wouldn't say it, when you go to see the Chase Bliss stuff, and those of you who already checked out both will know what I mean. They're different. They're different fields of thought for sure. Like completely different. Just you'll see what I mean. It won't take long once you see the two different fields of thought. Jack really likes to. He seems to like to squeeze as much as he can out of three knobs, and he does an amazing job at that. And then the Joel and the Chase Bliss stuff has many more switches and knobs, but still squeezing a million things out of the box. So yeah, both great. Both great companies. So
cool.
So before we get too sidetracked on everybody else's stuff, I didn't bring you on the show to talk about everybody else's stuff.
That's okay. Yeah, it's fun.
I want to talk about your stuff specifically. You know, your guitars. Were kind enough to send me that Ultra that I got to play for a couple weeks, and yeah, I loved it, and all my friends loved it, and it was beautiful, and it sounded great, and played great, and what more do you want out of a guitar? So, thanks for that.
You're very welcome. I'm glad you got to spend some time with it, and you know, you enjoyed it. That's cool. Yeah, that's That's one of my, you know, favorite, you know, tea style variants, you know, that I've done. And, you know, I actually made that guitar or was working on the design. And I use that somewhat loosely because, you know, it is essentially, it's a tea style, you know, in appearance, but there's a lot of different things going on with it.
Right.
You know, but it's not like have a completely, you know, radical or new, you know, design aesthetically. But I wanted to have a guitar that I could take out to gigs that, you know, for nights when you just want to have one guitar. And I never really take many guitars to gigs, but usually be two, pretty much always two guitars. But sometimes, you know, when you're doing those shows where you're, you got to load in through the front door or something like that and pass the bar and the stage is all the way at the back of the room. And you're just like, man, I just want to have my guitar on my back. I want to carry my amp and my pedal board. And that's the only trip I want to make, you know?
Right.
Cause it, you know, it's pouring rain or it's snowing or something like that. So, generally I'd bring I'd either bring, you know, one of my, you know, my Champtone, you know, Outlaw, which is, you know, basically my take on a traditional broadcaster, you know, or early Tele, and my 6120 or my Gold Top. And so, you know, they all had their things that they do and sort of three distinct sounds to my ears. And I kind of took all those things and put them into that Ultra model, and I was happy with it. You know, it was, you could kind of just, if you, you know, there, and there's a, you know, that model's on my website. So, I mean, you can visualize it. You know, I took the P90s from the Gold Top and the mahogany body and, of course the gold finish.
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
And then obviously we have the platform essentially is a T platform, but, to sort of throw in that 6120 flavor of the hollow body, it's chambered. Because I like vibratos an awful lot and, you know, all types of them. And you know, I've done some on solid bodies, and to me, I guess my baseline or sort of my reference point is in terms of vibrato is really a Gretsch,
right?
And you know, they just don't respond the same way to me on a solid body as they do on a hollow body. It's a different experience, you know.
Right. Most so that's, definitely.
That's where I was like, well, let's see what happens with a chambered vibe. That kind of got me, you know, pretty close. I was pretty happy with it. You know, like I was like, okay, I can definitely feel the body, kind of vibrate or resonate a little bit. I can feel it, you know, kind of fill it with a little bit of energy like a hollow body does.
Mm-hmm.
And the responsiveness of the vibrato was more lively, which I liked. And then, of course, you have the comfortable feel of, you know, a T-style guitar, which I think is really hard to beat. Such a comfortable guitar to wear.
It's hard to argue with that.
Super, super comfortable to wear. And it's also a great sit-down guitar, whereas I like Les Pauls quite a bit as well, but to me they're not very much of a sit down guitar, you know.
Not quite so much. I mean they're fine. There's nothing inherently wrong with sitting down to the Les Paul. It just isn't quite as comfortable as other models.
Yeah, it just doesn't fall there, and that's of course what I always try to shoot for, you know. I just you know, when you, whether you're sitting with the instrument or you're performing with it, you should not have to be fighting it in any way whatsoever ergonomically. And that's one thing that, you know, I've always kind of felt I was having to do with Les Pauls. So I'm sort of going in all directions with the description of this and all the guitars that it influenced. But what else is new? But that's kind of, you know, in summation, that's pretty much it. I guess the last thing I would add would be the neck. You know, just had a wider nut spacing or you know, just had greater width than, say, a traditional or kind of vintage Fender, you know, which was, I think a lot of guys associate, like, well, there's the feel of a Fender neck in the first position, and then there's a feel of a Gibson neck in the first position, and obviously mm-hmm. the Gibson's a bit wider. And I like that myself because I have fairly decent sized hands, and also if you want to do any, you know, more complex chord voicings and things like that, it gives you a little bit more real estate.
Yeah, most definitely. So vintage Gibson necks are definitely my favorite feeling by a long ways, which is a little bit odd for me because I'm a short dude with little short stubby fingers. So why I would like that, I don't really know. It doesn't make sense logistically, but somehow, like, that's always been my favorite style of neck is the bigger, like, my 55 Junior is my favorite neck. So, I don't know why that's where I do like other shapes and nut widths and everything. I really like playing my Telecaster, which is a much smaller neck.
Right.
But for some reason, if I just like had to pick one, that's all I got to have, that would be the direction I would lean.
Yeah. I think I'd have to agree with you there. And that's something that, like myself, and I'm sure many other builders and many guitar players are, you know, hip to is the, it's such a, you know, the feel of the neck of an instrument is, there's so many, well, I don't know, let me rephrase that. I don't know if players are necessarily so hip to it, but I think a builder, certainly a good builder, should be. There's so many factors that go into how a guitar neck feels in your hands. You know, it's not just the radius of the fretboard. It's not just the fret wire. It's not just the width of it at the nut. It's not just the taper, you know, how wide it gets from the nut to the end of the fingerboard. Mm-hmm. And it's not just the profile of it, meaning the the graduation of its, you know, girth or, you know, size as you work your way up the fretboard. And,
right.
So I kind of like obsess and get geeky about that with necks, you know, all the time. I try to remove it when I can. Like if I see a guitar that I, you know, want to pick up and play, I just try to play it. Mm-hmm. And not be like, oh, okay, well, let me take out my caliper here in my back pocket, you know. And I don't walk around with a caliper in my pocket, but not to stores at least. But well, I have done that.
You, I was gonna say, I bet you have, haven't you?
I have snuck into places because I was like, oh man, I really wish I had so and so because I need to make an educated decision on this, and I don't really know what to do. Well, I'll just go to the store with my caliper, and, you know. Hey man, you need help with that? Nope, I'm good.
There's worse things that happen to guitars in guitar stores than getting their necks measured. So I think you'd be all right.
Yeah, you're probably right. So anyway, yeah, I mean, that's, you know, in a roundabout way, that's the kind of the story with that guitar. And yeah, thanks for getting it off to Adam safe and sound. And you know, it looks like he's having some fun with it and you know, so it goes.
Yeah. I seen a clip of him testing out, or it was actually Daniel from Salvage was testing out one of his amps, and I seen that post the other day, and I was like, oh, good, it made it. Because I sent it off, and I didn't hear anything else after I sent it off. I was like, I've never shipped a guitar before. Hope it makes it down there. And then I seen that clip, and I was like, oh, whew, good.
Yeah. No, yeah, that's I understand. That's another guy, man. I was like, who's this guy? And then I checked out his, you know, his offerings or you know, what he's doing on Instagram a little bit. And I was like, wow, this is cool. You know, it looks like he's doing some coverings for some different amp companies, and he's doing these super cool, paddle boards. And I was just like, wow, this is, you know.
Yeah, he's got some cool stuff, some really cool stuff.
Yeah. So that's wonderful. You know, I'm all about that. You know, I oftentimes think that, I like the idea of, you know, other builders, you know, like, just being in contact and sort of, you know, sharing ideas and for the greater good, if you will, you know, to expand everyone's knowledge and, so the fact that, you know, I can send you the guitar and you can check it out and we can talk about it. And then, you know, I can send it out to Adam at Satellite and who I recently met earlier this year, and, you know, we kind of hit it off, and he's such a cool guy, and, you know, just got the sense from him, you know, that, you know, we were, you know, we'd be fast friends if we lived in the same town or something, you know?
Right.
And then, you know, this cat Daniel gets to check it out, and he's, you know, working on all his stuff is great, you know? And I the whole thing really started, you know, with my relationship with Doug Meyer at Mountain Cat, you know, and it was sort of at, you know, he carries my guitars, and to date, currently, he's my only quote official dealer.
Gotcha.
He's really a great guy, you know, because he's not echoing. I'm kind of echoing, you know, his philosophy in that, you know, the communal or community, feeling that he's trying to foster with builders and stuff. And he was like, well, yeah, you're sending that, you know, I told him I was going to do your podcast. And he said, well, if you're going to send that guitar out there, you know, why don't you send it out to Adam and check out for a little while. And, you know, that way you can have a guitar on the West Coast in case someone wants to check it out.
There you go.
I was like, yeah, that's a great idea. And, so I'm all about it. You know, I think it's really cool. Now my initial thought's coming to me, but it's all related. Like back in the day, or well, even currently, like say some, you know, legacy brand such as, excuse me, Fender or Gibson, you know, they have whole teams of people and, you know, that work on all this stuff. And, I'm mostly thinking, when I describe this, of the craft, you know, of the work.
Oh, right. Okay. Gotcha.
That make these instruments, that make these amps, that make these cabinets, that make these pedals, that design the circuits and any number of things. But, you know, like back in the day at the, you know, Kalamazoo factory, when Gibson's making guitars in their, you know, golden age, you know, they had guys that were shaping the necks, and, you know, this guy is going to cut neck blocks all day, and we're going to cut this neck box, going to be 2 3/8 inch tall, and this is how deep I'm cutting the dovetail, and I'm doing however many of these, you know. And then you had the varnish guy, who was, he did all the varnish work, and then you had the guy that would run in the bandsaw or whatever. Everybody, the point is, everybody had their specialty.
Gotcha. Okay.
That's how it would go. They would hire the best, skilled hands to do, a specific job, because they were the best at it. And when you're, that's awesome. But they didn't have to run the company, they just went to work and did their thing.
Right.
So, some of them did, obviously, you've got guys like, sort of the example that people use all the time, like Freddie Tavares, he was very hands-on, but from what I've read, he was also pretty deeply involved with, what he did with Fender,
right,
in terms of development and who knows what else, on a higher level or an operational level. But the small builder has to be really an expert at everything.
And, yeah.
That's challenging. It's hard to, it's hard to hone your chops at every single process, and it takes a long time. And the fact is that some people are better at doing some things than others.
Yeah. That's just how things go. And it's a crunch that everybody feels, I think, especially in the early stages, where you're trying to wear all the hats, and mm-hmm. not just throughout the build process, but then once you get the product done, then there's the whole issue of getting people to buy it, which is actually a completely different set of skills that doesn't always necessarily, the same person that can build an amazing guitar doesn't necessarily have the same skill set to market themselves or run a successful business. Now there are those that do, but I'm just saying that the two don't necessarily go hand in hand, and so it can be a really difficult thing for a smaller builder to wear every single hat. So,
I totally agree, and I would say that that the guy or gal that can would be the exception. That's sort of few and far between.
Yeah. I mean, everybody eventually has. I mean, at some point, you got to bring somebody on to do something. You literally can't do everything forever.
No,
there isn't a business alive that can get. I mean, that yes, you can do everything forever if you want to stay at a certain level.
Sure, yeah. It's about expectations, and. Obviously, that's different for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
What they want to do, but yeah, I totally agree.
Yeah, it's interesting to look at it from that perspective, because a lot of people, especially being involved in the music industry, the making of the music, oftentimes don't want to think about that these companies are a business. They're not doing it for charity. Yes, they're probably building guitars and pedals and amps, whatever, because they love guitars and pedals and amps, but they're also not doing it for free. They have families to feed. So it's something that I think people don't like to think about. They don't like to think about that it is a business. Like, it's not all just for fun and artistry, as much as we would like to think that it is.
Oh yeah, absolutely. And when you're in your infancy and starting out, it's a fine line to walk, because you want to do the best job you can and be personable and professional and please your clients, but you can't do it for free.
Exactly. No, kind of defeats the purpose.
Yeah. And, for example, I've had, at least a few, and if not more than a few, you know, well-known guitar players that, you know, I've been in discussions with about, you know, building a guitar for them, and then, you know, inevitably it comes down to, you know, okay, well, this is the cost, and you know, that can be, you know, a tough thing, you know, because obviously you want the exposure and you would love to have someone notable playing one of your instruments. But, you know, I was told very early on by a number of builders, like, you know, do not give a guitar to anyone. You know, you just cannot do that. The type of person you're dealing with, you know, if they don't understand that, then most likely you probably don't want to deal with them.
Right. Yeah, this is all getting, here we go again. This is all getting super familiar. This conversation about free gear just riles me up. You might have seen it, some other people might have. I wrote a rant piece a few weeks ago about it on the blog. Oh. Just because, born out of these conversations that I've been having with so many companies, of their frustration with the no name nobody calling them up and saying, "Hey man, I play in a band. Could you, you know, sponsor me and give me free stuff?" And it's like, you play in a band, you know, like you don't have, you're not in a, I'm trying to not to sound like a complete jerk, but you're not in a well-known band. Like, you're in a guy playing at, you know, Dave and Buster's or something. I don't know. Just like, you're just,
absolutely, man. Well, and that's
not a bad thing. I'm not trying to like down anybody for playing a dive bar or a kid's party or anything. Like, playing a show is playing a show. That's fine, but don't expect to get free gear because you're playing at the local bar. You know, that just is insane. And it's a pervasive thing. And I don't know if it's an entitlement thing or if it's people just rolling the dice and saying, "Well, what's the worst? They can say no." But it's like offensive. Like, it's.
I get where you're coming from, and I think, you know, ultimately, the, you know, that you know, if, let's just say, if I don't give a guitar to you know, guitar player XYZ, somebody else is, and, you know, they're going to go find somebody else that will, and that's kind of the sad truth of it. You know,
well,
and,
I mean, you want somebody to play your stuff though, because they actually really like it. And I don't know. I'm not going to talk like I'm some business genius, but if an artist really likes your stuff, I mean, they will probably, you know, if they can afford it, they'll pony up if they are really interested. And then, I don't know. I'm kind of talking way out of my league here. It just bothers me that people would think they're entitled, I guess.
No, I totally get it, man. And I mean, I'm kind of, you know, attitude wise, at least, and sensibility wise, I'm kind of punk rock like that. You know, it's just like, well, hey man, if you really like what I'm doing and you want to support me, then, you know, I'll work with you within reason, but, you know, here's the terms, and you know, you got to help me out. I can't just you know, give you a guitar for, you know, a discounted price just because you're, like you said, you know, you're playing some really cool you know, bars in your hometown. You know,
right?
It's all good. You know, I mean, it kind of, you know, goes back to that, you know, that thing of having to wear many different hats and understand, you know, the nuances of the business. And that is a hard part about doing this.
Yeah, most definitely. And it's not that, like, don't get me wrong, it's not that I'm against companies, you know, if they want to give out free gear, give out free gear. And I've certainly been like super fortunate to get some from some of these companies because they respect what I'm doing, and it's like, well, thank you so much. That's like super humbling. Like, it kind of blows my mind every time it happens. But it's not something that I'm like trying to farm. You know, it's always I always try to approach it with the attitude is like, hey, I've been approached by some companies to like post about something on Instagram, for instance, or talk about it, or to come on the podcast. And I'm like, okay, well, here's the thing. Like, I don't know you, you know, I've never heard of you before. No offense. But, you know, if your stuff's good, you know, send me one and let me play with it for a little while, and then I'll send it back or send it wherever you need to send it. I've had companies straight up tell me, well, I don't have any to send you. And it's like, well, you want me to talk about how awesome your thing is when I don't have any experience with your company before, and you won't send me your product to validate whether or not it's cool. It's
right. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, there's a lot of, you know, as we know, there's a whole lot of crazy out there in this world, you know? in the whole world for sure. You know, it's certainly in this musical instrument industry. Yeah. There's a lot of crazy in it. I mean, it's, you know, having, you know, played for many years in bands and, you know, done some touring and made records and all that stuff. And it's, you know, I can tell you, it's really not all that different than being in a band and trying to, you know, forge a career for yourself as a musician in a band. I mean, it's really just an extension of that. I that's how I view it.
That's interesting. Yeah, because I mean, I can't really speak to that experience. I've always been a very, this sounds kind of weird to say it like this, a very unprofessional player. Like everything I do, music has always just cost me money, and I've never wanted to try to. I never wanted to pursue it from, you know, a professional musician standpoint, because A, I'm not that good, and B, it was just not the lifestyle I wanted to lead. So.
Sure.
I can't really talk about that. It's a super passion of mine, but it's never something I wanted to make a career out of. And that's an interesting, the way you just talked about that's super interesting to me, because I can't really relate to that. But apparently I can. I just didn't know it.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's that whole thing, and I don't want to go on, you know, some discourse about the, you know, dark underbelly of the, you know, world of music, and, you know, which there's plenty of stuff out there in the interwebs there, kids, you can read all about it, you know.
That's right.
if you want to, but it is. It's just, I make that statement from, you know, the position that it's very competitive. It's very competitive. And there's a lot of people out there doing really great stuff. And just like being in a band and working on that, which is essentially a business. And you have to realize at a certain point that if you want to make a living at it and make a go at it, you've got to acknowledge that, and you've got to, you know, act accordingly, or you're not going to make it, you know?
Right.
You're not going to make it. I've always said that, gee, that sounds so like, you know, profound, like I'm some professor or something, but,
back in my day,
I haven't always said, but I feel now that, the sort of the window, let's say a band that's an original band doing original music. I think the window of time for a band before they take that next step and which leads to the ladder of where you need to continue taking steps.
Gotcha.
Is about 2 years. You know, you get in the garage and you start knocking stuff out with your bandmates, and you know, life's great and you're loving it. And, you know, those are amazing times. And, you're creating things and you do some shows and you get a following and you make a record and then you release the record and people actually respond to it and it's awesome. And then you do some more shows and maybe you do some touring and you're like, oh man, this is great, you know, and then all of a sudden it comes to this realization, well, and maybe not for everybody involved, that, you know, okay, well, we're going on about, I don't know, 2 years or so of this, and everything's cool, but we haven't really made that next step, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Gotta get things going a little bit more, because, you know, that's maybe slightly different, but I think, you know, the analogy is true. You know, slightly different for a band, that is, because you have multiple personalities involved, you know, unless of course you have a business partner or two or three. In terms of being an instrument maker, you know, was what I'm drawing the analogy to.
Right.
You've really got to focus in and start to take it seriously. And you know, people's, you know, your partners, your business partners, let's say, you know, their focus and their desire and their willingness, you know, that stuff can sway and change and certainly does along the way, you know, and not everybody's ready to go the distance, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Which is, you know, kind of another cliche. It's like, man, you know, the people that have become successful are, you know, the ones that didn't quit, you know, the ones that just didn't give up, you know, and you know, when they do give up, it's usually right before they were going to really hit on something, you know?
Right. Oh yeah. Big time.
So I think, but that's sort of, you know, my feeling on the band thing, like, you know, that 2 year mark, and cause I've been involved with it. I've been there, I've seen it happen. And, I've probably been on both sides of it, you know, like, it's just tough. Like, you really to steer the ship and I guess have that belief that, like, yeah, we're going to do this. And yes, this is going to happen. And, you know, and I would be remiss, certainly, I guess, at this opportunity to not, you know, send my dear and loving wife some love, because, you know, she has been that person for me, you know, and I very much feel as I'm still, you know, gaining, you know, ground or getting my footing, you know, with this endeavor of mine, this Champtone Guitars. You know, I'm having a great time doing it, but, I mean, I'm not going to lie to you. I mean, there's days where I'm just like, wow, this is tough. You know, how am I going to get through, you know, this hurdle, or how am I going to make it through this situation and get onto the next, you know, next plateau? How am I going to get up the ladder to that next step? And you know, she has kept me, you know, going many times.
Right. They tend to do that at just the right moments, don't they?
Yeah, man, that's true. It really is, man. You know, like, you know, you if you're lucky enough, you know, you've got a good partner in life. It's, you know, there's a lot to be said for that, and, you know, a lot to be thankful for.
Yeah, it's pretty enormous, and I don't know that, I mean, I've talked about my wife a couple times, but I don't know if I've probably give her the proper shout out, even though she doesn't listen to these, like you just did. So I'm going to do it now. Thanks, honey. Even no, if you ever listen to this episode, Jeff inspired me to publicly thank you.
So, oh, dude, I don't even, and don't get me wrong, I'm not one of those guys. It's like, you know, I'm rehearsing that I thank my wife at the Oscars speech, but right. because man, I am pretty bad with that. I got to be honest with you. So I don't know how it even came to mind, but it's, I guess, just because it's the truth. But yeah.
And today on the We Love Our Wives podcast, we talk about how much we love our wives and the music business sometimes.
Yep.
I know. This show is not
also
not actually yours has stayed on topic pretty well in comparison to some of my other episodes. I have a knack for getting completely and totally off subject, and it's like, oh yeah, today we're gonna talk about guitar gear. I forgot that's what we were here to talk about, and here we are. So
Yeah.
No, it's just funny.
I think that's cool, man. I've listened to, I think, almost every one of your podcasts, and I think that's one of the refreshing things about your podcast is that, well, you know, I don't know necessarily, you know, what I might get out of this episode, because I think you just have a, you know, a cool feel of how you approach it. And, you know, maybe I'd be a little less likely to tune into it every time if I knew it was just going to be Blake and this guy droning on about gear the whole time, you know? And sometimes you get that, and sometimes you don't. So it's cool, you know. It's cool. But the if I could just add one more thing about the you know, thank your wife thing. I also, just so you know out there, guys too, or ladies, you know, you can think of that as credits too. You know, those are like, you get those little shout outs. Those are like credits for the next time you're like, oh, man, I want to get this really sick reverb pedal. It's just like. And you think I'm kidding, but it's true, though. It's true. Those little things, you know, you just put them out there, and those are credits that build up, man. They're psychological credits.
Oh, psychological gear credit. Wife compliments equals psychological gear credits. This is a knowledge bomb that not a lot of people get to experience. So for all of you who are married or maybe thinking about getting married to a significant other who may or may not give a rip about guitar gear – you know, chocolates, you know?
Yeah. Or,
Well, it could go the other way. I talked about that with, Ryan from 60 Cycle Home a couple weeks ago. We were talking about, it would be interesting to, cause you don't hear about this very often and you know, it exists, but the other way around, we're always like, oh, my wife doesn't want me to get this pedal, but you know, there's girls everywhere out there that are like, my husband won't let me get this certain thing, and he doesn't understand why I need all these fuzz pedals. It's just not.
Yeah, yeah, no, that's totally. I heard that podcast, and I was laughing, man. It's pretty much. I have to imagine, yeah, that is, you know, I can't say that I know anyone like that myself, but I believe it, that it certainly exists.
Oh, I and if any of you girls listening are in that situation, I would welcome you on the podcast to discuss the plight of the gear loving girl, because you don't hear about that very often.
No, you don't. I mean, I have my good friend Chris. He's an electronic music artist, and his girlfriend Amanda, you know, they're both really into, you know, analog synths and gear and stuff, and I think that's probably the closest that I've got in sort of my immediate circle. And he sent me a text the other day. He was like, dude, Amanda just ordered this ridiculously cool analog monosynth or something like that, you know. And so he was like, he was all excited. So I guess maybe that's not an argument or a good example for argument here, but you know, I'm sure we'll keep looking though. So
this dynamic exists. It absolutely must.
Yeah,
it's just funny to think about. It is. You know, because the classic story is, you know, the guy, he leaves the house with the empty case, you know, to come back with the. You know, he just, oh, it's just old, same old case that he always goes, and then he comes back, you know, and there might be a new Telecaster in it. But, you know, yeah. It's the same old case. Don't worry about it. Nothing to see here. Just go on your way.
or you just get to the point where you have so much stuff, it's like static. And you know, you're assuming your significant other, you know, doesn't, you know, they don't have a, a gear buying compulsion and sickness
that's such a sickness
infected their, you know, soul. they don't really know, man. They can go in and look in your music room or whatever it is, wherever you keep your stuff, under your bed or, you know, in your drawer, like, And they just can't tell, like, what is that? Is that new or is that new? But sometimes they can, I guess, you know. I don't know, I'm all over the map with this. I guess I'm afraid of what might happen to me, you know.
It's kind of I think that's kind of where I am. And I asked my wife about it, actually, because I had your guitar, actually, now that I think about it. I was playing it, and she come out, and, you know, she was carrying my son or whatever, and she come out, and she's like, hey, yeah, somebody's here, I can't remember, cable guy or something. You know, I'm sitting there holding this pretty, I mean, it's not like a subtle guitar. It's a gold Telecaster-ish guitar with a Bigsby. It looks pretty, you know, it's classy, but it's kind of flashy a little bit.
Yeah,
and,
sure.
And it's like, she knows that I mean, you know, I would think that she would have been like, wait, what's that? You know? Because it's not my Les Paul Jr. It's not my Black Telly. It's not, you know, my Rookie. Or it's not my normal stuff. And it was just like, oh, no, this is guitar. He's playing guitar. And I was like, yeah, I asked her later. I was like, did you notice that guitar? And she's like, no, what? What are you talking? What are you talking about? I'm like, well, yeah, I'm testing this thing out, and it's awesome, and I thought you would actually dig how it looked, you know. And she's like, yeah, it's a guitar.
Yeah, yeah. And then you know, the polar opposite of that is sometimes, you know, and I believe the exact words around, you know, my domicile are, wait, what is that?
Oh,
you know, when it, you know, you're walked up on with, that's just a new, well, I don't know. I'm working on this. It's a customer's. That's what I'm going to go with.
It's a customer's. I got to fix it. Yeah, when did you start doing amp repair? Don't worry about it. Don't worry about it. It's fine.
Yep. Everything's good. It's all good.
There's also, if you got enough, I've heard some people doing the, this old thing. Oh, this. Well, no, I've had this. I've had this forever.
I know, it's funny, man. It's so funny. It's a universal thing. It really is.
It is. How stupid is it, too? I mean, like, it's awesome. Don't get me wrong. I love being a gearhead, but, like, really? Come on. At some point, we gotta acknowledge our own ridiculousness, or at least our own sickness. Does this exist in other worlds, in other hobbies?
I mean, oh yeah, yeah. It does. You know it does, man. I think that I think, you know, when you're whether it's a hobbyist thing or you're a professional or whatever it is. I mean, I think obviously I'm a little biased when it comes to music gear. You know, there's so many ways to think about it.
Mm-hmm.
But I always try to genuinely and look at these things as tools. And that's what they are at the end of the day, you know, is, you know, a guitar is a tool to express, you know, yourself in whichever way you're able to, or mm-hmm. That you decide to. And the same thing goes for really, you know, I guess any of it, you know, pedals, amplifiers, nice mic preamps, nice microphones, you know, a sick console, whatever it is. But of course, you know, amongst that stuff, you know, there's all that gray area. You know, there's like you kind of, I think a lot of us fall in love with the, at least I know I do, you fall in love with the potential of, like, you see something.
Oh, yeah.
And you're like, oh, man. Like my friend Jack and I, we went to see, My other friend, I got all these friends. We had seen my friend Kirk's band Silencio play over the summer. They're from Pittsburgh, and they're an original band, but they are essentially kind of a David Lynch, Angelo Badalamenti tribute band. So they do a lot of the soundtrack music to some of those great, you know, collaborations that Lynch and Angelo did, you know, Blue Velvet and Lost Highway and stuff like that. But he had, we went to see them play, and, of course, you know, we're the lowly guys peering over the edge of the stage, like, what's on that guy's pedal board?
Of course. You know? I'm always that guy.
And I can't get that, like, goofy about it quite, although I have been there many times. But Kirk's a friend and he's a customer, but the guitar player, that is. But he had a Strymon Big Sky on his board. Mm-hmm. And, you know, his, you know, just with that style of music and the spaciousness of it and everything and the reverb on it, is, you know, it just sounded so beautiful. And subsequently, you know, he and I are like texting each other like, dude, the Strymon Big Sky, like, did you hear that? You know, it's like, mm-hmm. Did you see that video? Did you hear that? You know, and I was like, and so like, for like 3 or 4 weeks, the running joke was like, you know, just, oh, I found this or I found that. And I was like, just please stop. Everybody, all the pedal makers, like all the guitar makers, all the amp makers, just please stop. Because I want everything.
I need all of it.
Yeah.
Actually, so. I said that the other day. I can't remember. It was some poll, like some gear poll. And it was like, if you had unlimited funds, what would your ultimate rig be? Which is kind of a question that I usually get into here. But I just said all of it. Like,
yeah.
Like, don't make me choose. I could get just as much use out of a gonculator, a DOD gonculator, as I could, like, a gold clon. Like, two totally different things, but.
Sure, man. I mean, yeah, that being said, you know, it's like, I mean, I've always had kind of a, you know, a somewhat modest collection of guitars and amps. You know, it's never really, gotten too crazy for me, because I'm always, I guess I always find that, you know, if I'm not using it, then it, you know, it must go, you know, and there's certainly a window of time with that, but, and some things have stayed and excuse me, some, you know, many things have left, you know, but, like one thing, for example, that comes to mind is, you know, I've had a full tone super trem on my board for like over 10 years, you know, mm-hmm. And I kind of can't imagine not having that pedal ever.
Right. That's a great one.
Yeah. Yeah. It's yeah, I mean, it's, you know, you love it all. And, you know, I guess, you know, comes back to that, the potential of, like, you know, what I could do with this, you know, and that's sort of the process in a way, you know, you check something out and you hope you can, you know, maybe it's got a song in there, you know, or it's like, well, man, that's a good guitar. I think it might have some songs in it for me, you know?
Mm-hmm. Oh yeah.
So, and some do and some don't, you know? And if they don't, or if I don't bond with it, you know, or something, then I just, you know, I try to remember, like, hey, man, these are just tools to, you know, for you to, let's just say, enjoy life with, you know. And if it's not doing it for you, then, well, just maybe pass it on to somebody else that it will do it for, and then you can find something else that will do it for you.
Oh, that's so nice of you. I'm such a hoarder. It's like, well, I've said before, I sold one guitar in my life, and
that's amazing.
And I regret it. Like, I should have, like, I traded this. It was called a Marquee, and it was like a short scale 4-pickup Japanese guitar. Really weird microphonic pickups. Each pickup had its own individual switch to turn it on and off. It was just this really odd thing. It had a great neck on it and a giant headstock. It was like the size of, like, almost like a P bass headstock on the short scale guitar. It was just this odd, weird thing.
Cool.
And I really liked it. But I fell in love with this vintage Melody Maker and decided, well, since I didn't quite have the scratch to put, you know, that was to put the Melody Maker on layaway, I would just trade that Marquee. Cause I was in my mind, I was like, well, that's a cheap guitar. You know, it's, yeah, it's cool and weird and whatever. And now I'm just like, I should have just waited the, you know, the extra time and ponied up the extra couple $100 and I'd still have that thing. Cause now I'm like, I really want it back. It's, yeah. And that is why I'm a sick gear hoarder. Like, I sell one guitar and now I'm mad at myself. I'm never selling it again. Never again will I sell any more guitars.
Yeah. No, I hear you, man. It's, you know, hey, it's all kinds, man, all types out there. And I mean, excuse me, my wife's kind of like that. She's like, oh, you're going to sell that guitar? What? You love that guitar. You're not selling that guitar. What are you talking, you know? So, like, I got a couple things that I've, you know, like I said, like, and I definitely catch flack from, you know, my gear buddies and stuff, you know, they'd be like, yeah, you said that about that. And you sold that too. So I don't believe any of it. you know, but I have a 72 precision bass, that my father got for me when I was like 15.
Nice.
So, I don't think that will ever go.
Right.
And at this point there's too much of my DNA on this guitar, if you will. You know, there's just too much of me, you know, I could never, you know, that's so, you know, I've had it for 25 years.
Right. Yeah. I totally get it. I can relate to that. So,
yeah. I mean, you got that cool. If I have the story right, your junior, or was that a family guitar?
I've talked about that several times, so I'll try to be brief. But yeah, it was my grandpa's 55 Les Paul Junior, and so yeah, that's my number one, and then that'll never go anywhere. So.
Yeah, something like that is just, you know, that's an amazing thing. So yeah, that would never go.
No,
there'd be some serious apocalyptic times before that goes.
exactly, and then it would probably go to my dad. So
yeah, right. It would be in the family.
Yeah, it wouldn't. That's not leaving the grasp. So. Yeah, exactly. Just like you said, it'd have to be a serious situation for me to even consider it. So hopefully that never happens.
Yeah, hopefully not, man. I don't think it will. I think you'd be good.
It'd be so good. Just like get another one. No, I don't know. Well, I'm here at this juncture again where I know I need to cut this off, but like. This is actually a first time thing that's happened, Jeff. We actually went the whole episode, and we didn't touch on any of my normal questions that I normally. I didn't even get into your like musical backstory or any of that stuff. So we might have to do this again because we are already over the hour mark.
Yeah. Well, I'm sure some of that's on me and my, you know, tangential, ramblings, but, maybe we can do a part two at some point or something like that. Because
yeah, we'll have to do a part two that should have been part one.
Yeah. Yep,
where we
exactly.
Actually dig into you a little bit more than just bemoan the, music industry and compliment our wives.
Yeah, man, it's all good. Well, it was definitely fun. Do we have like 2 minutes? You want to do one of the daily scheduled or questions or
no? Let's save those for another time and
cool.
Use these last couple minutes for you to shamelessly plug all that you do. Because I know you do some other stuff in addition to the guitars with the wiring harnesses. And you tell everybody what you do and where they can find you.
Yeah, well, I'm located in Saratoga Springs, New York, which is just about 45 minutes north of the Albany, which is the capital of New York. And you can find me at chimptone.com. And obviously you can reach me through there. And, you know, I've stayed pretty active with my Instagram feed and I've got lots of information on the website about the guitars that I'm currently making and that, you know, I offer and I do have a little storefront on there. And, you know, I started out, doing, I guess aftermarket, you know, electronics upgrade kits for various types of guitars, and I did quite well with those for a while, and I still am doing them. But in the last couple of years or so, I've been more focused on, you know, building and also, you know, some services to guys, you know, like I do, you know, I do finish work for people, that are, you know, need that kind of stuff done, and, you know, any kind of customization. You know, I do the occasional, you know, repair work as well. So I'm kind of, you know, wearing a lot of different hats and doing a lot of different things and always building. That's kind of my thing. I'm excited. This year, has been a big development year for me, for my, my archtop prototype, which I've been wanting to get to for quite a while. And I've just about finished the prototype. I'm actually going to be putting that into the finish booth in a couple of weeks, and I that thing's going to be done soon. And
nice,
that's going to be a new instrument for me under actually my last name. It's going to be the Cadillac Grand Electric, I'm excited about that. You know, you can see stuff about that on the Instagram and Facebook feed, and eventually I'll get one all photoed up nice and pretty and have it on the website. A little slower with the website because it's a website.
Right. Of course.
And, you know, like I said earlier, if anybody wants to check something out, you can certainly, contact me, you know, directly, or you can, contact, you know, Doug at Mountain Cat Guitars, who's a super cool guy. And, I think, you know, some of the other builders that you have had on or have mentioned, certainly he carries and represents. I know he has, Cower Guitars, and, I think he may have had some Roni guitars at one point. I'm not sure if he does currently, but,
okay.
I feel really good to be sort of part of the, you know, group of, you know, artists and builders that he represents. And he's one of the few guys that I know of, certainly in my neck of the woods, that's really dedicated to, you know, representing, you know, guys like myself and amp builders. You know, he has, satellite amps and, you know, really, really believes in you know, supporting guys like us and spreading the awareness.
Cool, man.
So yeah, that's
very cool.
That's me.
That's you. All right. Well, we'll dig more into you at another juncture. We'll have to have you back on, and we'll actually talk about you instead of us just kind of rambling. Maybe. We still might just ramble because that's kind of what happens. So
it does. Well, I'd love to any time and. Thanks for having me on, Blake. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, no problem, man. Thank you for coming on. So, go ahead and wrap this up. So, for Jeff, I'm Blake, and as always, good people, good luck, and good tones. Have a good night.
Catch you later, man.
Bye. All right, everybody, that does it for this episode. As always, thank you very much for tuning in, and... thanks to Jeff for coming on. It was a great show. And I just want to take the last little bit here to say thank you very much. 2015 has been very eye-opening and very amazing. So I've met a lot of really cool people, and some of you guys have just gone so above and beyond in supporting the show. It's really humbling, and I thank you very much for that. It's very, very appreciated. So thank you very much. So I hope you all have a wonderful holiday, a very Merry Christmas, and I'll talk to you next week. Take care. Bye. One last thing before we totally sign off here. I just want to remind you that if you do any shopping at Stringjoy, that's Stringjoy Guitar Strings made in Nashville,
that will help me out as well. As I've said for years, I'm heavily involved in that company, and I really do think they're making the best products on the market. So if you would like to try custom strings, go to tonemob.com/stringjoy and check them out today. I seriously love what the team down there is doing. I help them out with all kinds of things, and by you supporting them, you are also supporting me as well. And hey, you need some strings, so why not get some custom strings just for your guitar and playing style? Again, the link for that is tonemob.com/stringjoy, and that will take you right to their website, and you can do all your shopping through there, and that will help everyone involved out. So thank you very much. Talk to you next time. We are brought to you by the wonderful folks at Gun Street Wiring Shop. Yes, Gun Street Wiring Shop. I've talked about them before. I used to say based out of Bend, Oregon, but guess what? Sean moved to my neck of the woods. Sean's in Portland. Sean is awesome and has helped me with a bunch of stuff lately. And if you have wiring needs for your guitar, he can help you too. If you want to get weird with it, he can get weird. If you just need to spruce things up a little bit, there's your guy. He takes all the guesswork out of doing your guitar wiring, and he makes it simple, and his customer service is top-notch, and I can't say enough good things about Gun Street as a company. I really respect Sean and what he's all about, and the product is top-notch. I've got 3 different guitars that now have Gun Street harnesses in them, and I could not be happier. So go to GunStreetWiringShop.com and check them out.